So, Brett, what do you make of Simmons moving to the Angels? Does this matter to you at all?
No, I give zero shits.
Okay. Brett, you answered. Craig?
I can't top that.
Episode 60 of There Is No Offseason, Baseball Prospectus' podcast focusing solely on Fantasy Keeper and Dynasty League formats. I am your host, Ben Carsley of BP Boston and the BP Fantasy team, and I am joined by BP's managing editor, Brett Sayer, and BP Prospect Team editor, Craig Goldstein. Guys, hello. On a scale from 1 to traded for Dansby Swanson, how special are you feeling right now?
I'm feeling pretty Dansby Swanson right now.
What's the opposite of being traded for Dansby Swanson?
You trying to record a podcast.
Yeah, that's because that's how I feel.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I feel very Swansby dancing.
Yeah, I think that's a fair estimate of how this is going for you.
Yep.
But it's fine because, you know, we're not agitated at all. So this is going to be a great podcast. For those of you listening at home or wherever you're listening from, you'll already be able to tell a few changes. Intro, little different, very daring, we know. No Mao, huge upgrade. Obviously, that's been an anchor around our feet for quite some time now. So now that Mao's gone, we can bring you legitimate, serious analysis and sort of move past aesthetics. And three, what's different is we're recording, which is probably, you know, a substantial upgrade because we've tried this several times now. And through no fault of Craig's own, and please read that as everything is Craig's fault, this time you'll actually be able to download or stream this podcast, whatever suits you best. So one big change for everyone to get used to, in addition to the lack of Mao, is there's going to be a lack of reader emails, at least on a weekly basis. Weekly, that's cute. There's going to be a lack of reader emails every single Tino moving forward. We have enough to talk about, and we'll sort of save them batches and do them in larger batches for when we actually have good questions. And we certainly do not need any questions this week because every single trade and free agent signing in the world is happening. Brett, do you have a rough count of how many trades or deals have gone down even since we started the first attempt at this podcast?
I was tracking them with blood marks on the wall here, but I have run out of blood.
Yeah, blood marks on the wall are difficult. We have to start over three times because you can't really just throw the blood back in there. Okay, well, since time is of the essence for us now, let's get right to it. In this episode, we are going to talk about sort of the seven big-name pitchers who have either been traded or signed with new teams so far. We're going to hit on the relevant hitters who have moved. Then we'll stop, and next time we record Tino, which hopefully will not be in 3 or 4 weeks, we will go over some of the more minor acquisitions, closer, Rama, and the prospects who have been dealt. So let's start at the top with David Price, who, of course, now is a Red Sox. Brett, is this the type of pitcher where, you know, it doesn't really matter where he ends up because he's so good?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, there was really nowhere he could have ended up that would have caused him not to be a no doubt top 10 pitcher. I mean, maybe you could argue that Coors Field would be the one place, but that's not the case anyway. You know, Boston is not the worst place to pitch in the world, and you know, the Red Sox look to have an improved defense even if they don't have a good defense. And Price pitched really, really well down the stretch in Toronto, and Toronto sucks to pitch in. So it's I think it all gets thrown out the window with an elite talent like Price, especially one who, you know, this isn't an NL to AL transition. He's been in the AL East his entire career, so he's not adjusting to this to any sort of different level of competition. He's just going to be really good, Craig.
Well, Detroit's not in the AL East, but aside from that, 100%. Yeah, I agree with your analysis on the last edition that only recorded my voice, so you can special. Maybe we'll hand that out, that recording out as a prize to whoever wins the Tino Listeners League this year. I think I put Price around what, sixth or seventh in terms of starting pitchers. I had him behind DeGrom and Fernandez, and right around who did we have him right around? I had him ahead of Greinke.
Yeah, and behind Sale.
I had him behind Sale, DeGrom, and
ahead of Greinke and Chris Heston.
Yeah, and ahead of Greinke and Heston. So yeah, I mean, I think that's really all that needs to be said. Even if you're worried about his inability to perform in the playoffs, he's really good in the fantasy playoffs. So that's helpful.
Ooh, nice tie in there. Okay, Craig, let's stay with you because why not? And go to Zach Greinke, who has left your beloved Dodgers for the Diamondbacks. Any sort of impact in his fantasy value, or can we just expect more of the same?
I mean, I think more of the same. Obviously, the park is not as good in terms of park effects. But I think the team is probably poised to score similar runs. I obviously Goldschmidt and Pollock are great. There are some black holes in the offense, but it's overall a really solid offensive team with Peralta, and you know, maybe Yasmani Tomas can improve, a full season of Jake Lamb, et cetera. So
Yasmani Tomas is not as good.
Yeah, not as good, but sounds better, I think, personally.
Not a big team.
All right. But yeah, I think overall the same kind of thing as Price. You know, he's an elite pitcher, so it doesn't really matter where he is.
Brett, any scalding hot Greinke takes?
No, I think he's a couple spots behind him, and I think he's also really, really good.
Bold. Okay, let's move on to the first pitcher who we actually had a little debate about last time, and that is Jordan Zimmermann, who was indeed the first sort of major domino to fall this offseason, moving from the Nationals to the Tigers, despite the fact that Dave Dombrowski is not there to heap giant piles of money upon him. Brett, what does this do for Zimmermann's fantasy value, and sort of where do you peg him in your overall dynasty rankings? I know he's sort of a divisive player among the dynasty community.
Yeah, you know, I feel like I've been kind of high on him in years past, and a little higher than the industry. But you know, obviously, this is a step back going to not only a slightly stronger division, but into the American League, where you know he's going to take a step back across the board. Though, with that said, I think there's a good chance here that his perceived value is going to outsync his actual value. You know, there's a lot made of the velocity drop and of the strikeout drop, and you know, obviously that stuff is real. But he was, you know, he was not a terrible pitcher while that was all happening. It was not a good year for him, but. I still think he is a reasonably safe option as a, you know, somewhere between the 25th and 30th best starter, maybe slightly lower than that, maybe 25 to 35 in that range. I think he's good enough to have as an SP2 in a deep mixed league. You know, we talked about feeling comfortable with him being an SP2 in a TDGX style league, and I think he's gonna be available. I think he's someone you can get via trade. You know, not easily, but I think he's certainly reachable. Ben, what are your thoughts on Zimmermann?
Yeah, I largely agree with you. You say 25 to 30. 30 seems low to me. I'm not sure I can readily think of around 30 arms I'd rather have than Zimmermann in fantasy. I would certainly be closer, you know, maybe to the 22 to 25 range with him. No, I get the long-term concerns, and I know Craig made a good point last time, surprisingly, about velocity drops with Zimmermann. But at least for the next 2 to 3 years, which is really how I'm learning to think about dynasty leagues when it comes to anyone who's not a super young talent, I'm pretty confident that Zimmermann will still produce. Craig, it seems like you were a tiny bit lower on him.
Yeah, I think I am. And the point I wanted to make about the the velocity drop is that he lost about a mile per hour on his fastball last year. But it's also worth noting that, you know, a lot of pitchers drop velocity, maybe add a little back or what have you. And a lot of people learned, a lot of pitchers learned to pitch with their new velocity. So the question is whether he's going to be able to do that. And I mean, I think there's a good chance he has a better year than he had last year. I don't think he's an 11% homer per fly ball guy. And I think, you know, if the velocity loss is permanent, he probably learns to adapt and maybe not pitch up in the zone as much, whatever it ends up being. But I don't think I'm not as comfortable with him as a second starting pitcher going forward. And I do think that even if he rebounds some from his 2015 numbers, that his overall, his outlook going forward, and let's say just over the life of this contract for the next 5 years, is going to be a lot closer to 2015 Jordan Zimmermann than it was for 2013 through 2015 Zimmermann, if that makes any sense. So I'm a little bit lower than you guys. I think he is probably closer to 30 than 20 or 25, but I've always been a little bit lower on him just because the strikeout, the elite strikeout stuff isn't there, and that's really what I'm looking for in fantasy starting pitching more than anything else.
Craig, how much do you ding him for moving to the AL, if at all?
I don't think it's that big a deal. I don't know. I think he's a good enough pitcher that it's not like he's feasting on the bottom of NL lineups more than, you know, more than you would expect. I mean, I assume he has great numbers against those guys because they're not good hitters, but most AL lineups aren't like solid from top to bottom anyway. They're playing, you know, a glove first shortstop or a glove first player at another position instead of the pitcher. So while there's obviously a difference there in talent, I don't know how big a difference that really is in terms of overall effect. Brett, do you have a different view on the league switch?
Yeah, I think, you know, I think I'm probably a little bit more down on the switch than that.
Well,
but
okay, so if the Tigers played in the NL, where would you have him number wise versus where he is now?
I'd probably not more than five, maybe three. Three to four
spots higher.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I mean, that's fine.
Yeah. I mean, it's
tangible,
not
tangible, but not significant.
Yeah, exactly. More than a tiebreaker, but less than a game changer.
Yep. That's fair.
Okay. Can we move on to what I really want to talk about now?
Yes.
Cause I'm excited. Okay. Shelby Miller was traded. We've been hearing about this forever and it happened. And holy crap, he was traded for a lot, probably too much, but definitely too much. But I like what this means for his fantasy value, at least in the short term. While he'll be pitching in a slightly rougher park, he should also be pitching for a better team. You know, he stayed in the NL. It would have been great if he had ended up a Giant or a Dodger or a Padre or something, but would have been pretty terrible if he ended up, you know, a Yankee or a Blue Jay or something along those lines. So overall, I think this is a positive move for Shelby, who I know we talked about a lot, I think, in the early days of this podcast, but I don't think we've really, you know, taken a deep dive in a while. So, Craig, we'll start with you. I know you were super high on Shelby as a prospect, at least. Does this move move the needle for you at all? And what are your thoughts on, you know, where you'd be comfortable slotting Shelby in a Dynasty League team?
Yeah, I did love him as a prospect, and I kind of haven't loved him as much as a pro, and I think that's probably not different than a lot of people. Obviously, the results haven't been sterling as a pro outside of his I guess he really only had a bad 2014, but
yeah, he's been pretty good.
Yeah, no, you're right, he has. But 2014 was significantly bad.
It's not so good.
Yeah. I think the thing to note, which you mentioned in the previous recording, is that that the use of his cutter has been really significant, and he added about 8 percentage points to his ground ball percentage, which is a big deal because he gave up a fair amount of home runs in years prior. And this year he was closer to, he was just under, he was at 0.57 homers per nine, which last year he was over one, which is a significant difference. And I don't think he's really going to be able to, I wouldn't have banked on him repeating that homers per nine in Turner, which is a pretty good place for pitchers who give up fly balls. And, you know, going to Arizona is not going to help that. I think, you know, he can mitigate that if he can repeat his ability to get ground balls at a high clip. But I'm not sure. I guess he was right around 20% strikeouts, which is great if he's going to throw 205 innings. But I guess I'm not sure he improves on that. But I think it's worth noting that he definitely could improve on that. And that kind of goes back to his status as a prospect and why everyone liked him in the first place. You know, he struck out over 23% in 2013. And I think he has the ability to get back there. I don't think that's gone or anything. I'm just not kind of confident that it will come back.
Yeah, and we touched on this a little bit in the last recording. Listen, he's clearly has shown the ability to adapt already. I mean, he barely threw a cutter before last year, and he relied on it quite heavily last year, and he was very good. That's not to say he's magically going to keep finding pitches, but he is young, and I think he's younger than people realize. You know, he'll be pitching at 25 next year. So I'm really not closing the door on him continuing to evolve as a pitcher, and maybe he's not going to be the sort of fantasy number one we envisioned when he was a prospect. But in his peak years, I really don't think fantasy number two is out of the question, even though perhaps that's not what I'm forecasting for next year. Brett, if you had to rank Shelby, where would you slot him in approximately?
I don't think I'd have him very far behind where Jordan Zimmermann is, or maybe right in a similar range. I think I'm definitely with you guys that I'm still on the Shelby Miller has the upside train. And, you know, I think even though he did outperform, I mean, he pitched well last year. I think he would have gotten more, you know, exposure or more talked about in fantasy circles had he not won just six games and then toiled away for the Braves the last 4 months of the season. But, you know, I think he's someone who you can be comfortable enough with as an SP2, a back end SP2, or be really happy with as a third starter. He's you know, his velocity ticked up a little bit last year. And he showed some, you know, as Craig was talking about, he showed some positive signs. I think this is an overall good short term move for him getting out of Atlanta, and it's Shelby Miller. What's not to like?
Speaking of what's not to like, we can move on to our next sort of large pitcher acquisition of the offseason, which is Jeff Samardzija, who no one has any idea what to do with. He was incredible in 2014. He was very, very bad in 2015. I think the good news is he went to a pretty favorable park and an organization that has success, you know, sort of getting the most out of pitchers. But the bad news is his 2015, which really is not going away. It was pretty remarkably bad if you take a look at it. So, Craig, what do you make of Samardzija? Do you have sort of more insight than I have? Because I sort of just default to the shruggy face with him.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of do. I don't shruggy face. I'm kind of a displeased face in regards to Samardzija. He eats a lot of innings. I mean, I think in fantasy he's more of a SP4, maybe a low-end SP4. He definitely can miss a lot of bats, but he gets hit pretty hard. He led the league in hits given up last year. In his defense, Don Cooper kind of spoke up and said that it was his fault for kind of tinkering with him. And in Ben, can you not do a tweet right now?
I'm not.
Okay. It seemed like it.
What would I have to tweet about? You changed the phrasing.
That's true. anyway, I do think that I think he can be better. Right? I think it would be hard for him not to be better than he was last year, having just under a 5 ERA. But I don't think 2014 is coming around ever again. And if you want to look at his performance before those years, it's not particularly inspiring either. And I think, you know, ultimately, he's probably closest to, if I had to guess a line, it'd be a lot closer to his 2012 production, which was maybe with more innings, but that was a 3.18 ERA and 25% strikeout rate. I'd probably go a little lower on the strikeout rate, but 3.38 ERA sounds good. I know that's around what you tossed out when I asked you what you would have for a baseline production for him going forward. Ben, so and I agree with it. I don't remember if Brett was on the same page or not.
I was on a pretty similar page, and then we talked about that being pretty much Chris Heston, and then
yeah, God.
Well, the thing is, you know, like at some point in this 5-year deal, you know he's going to have a great year, but there's no way to predict when it's going to be, and I'd just rather stay away.
Yeah, I guys like that have. That have that much risk, but without that sort of really elite upside, I'm very happy to let them be someone else's problem and headache.
Yeah, and the other thing I'd say is that for the great reputation the Giants have and that they've earned, like if we look at their most recent, if you look at their most recent track record with pitchers, I mean, it, you know, Kane has. Had a backslide. Obviously, Lincecum had a backslide. And obviously, there are injuries involved. But, you know, this is still about fixing broken pitchers to an extent. And I'm not sure that there's necessarily a belief that they can just walk in and fix him, for me. I know that they have a track record in the minors of helping pitchers kind of maximize their talent. But, you know, in the majors, I don't know if that's necessarily the same thing. And even more recently in the minors, it's not like we've seen Tyler Beede take the steps forward that we assumed he would, or Phil Bickford. You know, both of those guys are still kind of potential bullpen arms at this point. And maybe the Giants have done the most that they can with those talents, and that's just what they are. I don't know. But I would just say that, you know, recent kind of performance in terms of fixing players is not necessarily in their favor. Is that unfair to them? I don't know.
I don't think it's unfair. I don't really know if anything was fixable with Lincecum. I don't know if he's as strong. He's so unique that I'm not sure that's a great example. But the point is well taken with Kane, certainly. And even going back a few years, like Jonathan Sanchez broke and they couldn't fix him and the whatnot.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
for every Ryan Vogel song, there is a Jonathan Sanchez.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, you could also make the argument that they got by far the most out of Jonathan Sanchez as compared to anyone else who tried to get anything out of Jonathan Sanchez.
That is true.
It's a glass half full, glass half empty argument.
Yep.
Now we know who is who.
We talked about Jonathan Sanchez too much.
Yes, we have said his name 4 times, which is at least 3.5 times too many for any single podcast. Okay, so let's sort of power through the remaining guys on this list who are not young, so they're a little less interesting for dynasty purposes that way, but who could definitely have an impact for the next year or two. Craig, in the Greinke piece you wrote on BP, which I reluctantly admit was very good, you also spoke about Iwakuma, who of course has signed with the Dodgers. So why don't you fill us in on what you think this means for him?
Yeah, I think he is kind of an SP2 in fantasy when he's on the field, and the question is how often that's going to happen. Last year, he had 20 starts, just under 130 innings. He was just under 180 innings in 2014. So it's been a while since he's put in a full season, though he did make 28 starts in 2014, which I think the Dodgers would take and fantasy owners would take really quite, you know, happily. The question is whether, you know, his kind of nagging ailments. He's had this finger tendon injury that cropped up, is one that kind of lingered, and he's had he had shoulder soreness dating back to his time in Japan. He's had neck issues. He's had back troubles, and at 34 going on 35 for 2016, that's a very real concern, both in real life and in fantasy. I think when he's on the field, he's going to be a highly desirable asset. He strikes out around, I think, league average strikeout rate or a little above. He doesn't put many guys on the base path via walk. And his biggest problem is home runs. And that I don't think that is going to get any better going to L.A. because Safeco is one of the places that's a tremendous place to pitch in if you give up home runs. And, you know, L.A. is a pitcher's park, but not to the same extent that Safeco is. So I do think that one of the small things that could affect him is what happens on the Dodgers infield, because he does generate a ton of ground balls. He's been over 50% in three of the four seasons with the Mariners, and he's generally had good defense there. For the most part, the Dodgers defense should be fine, but they're kind of unsettled at second base. And Corey Seager is fine with what he gets to. The question is how much he'll get to as a shortstop. So,
yeah, no, I don't think I would characterize that as a plus in his profile right now, because we still don't really know who's going to be there.
Right. Yeah, exactly. So I think that's a concern. I'd be fine with him he's a risky SP2. If he's your third starting pitcher in a league like TDGX with 20 team, you're doing really well and you have a lot of upside there, but you know, the injury risk is substantial.
Okay. So what's interesting for me, and this ties in perfectly to our last pitcher, is John Lackey, who signed a 2-year deal with the Cubs. Brett, would you rather own Iwakuma or Lackey for next year?
Mm-hmm. See, this is what the podcast I recorded was like, but we couldn't even hear you.
I was on mute. It happens once an episode.
Glad we got it out of the way early. Clockwork.
Is this the reason why the other ones didn't record? Because I didn't accidentally go on mute when it was time for me to talk?
Oh, definitely the first one. Episode 60 V1, that might have been the failure reason. Yes. Yeah. I don't know about V2.
Yeah, give me Iwakuma.
We moved on. We're on to Lackey.
Well, yeah,
the question was Lackey or Iwakuma, right? Yeah. That was the question that I answered.
Take your fucking brain off of you, Craig.
I want the guy, if we're not talking about, you know, a number one starter, or even really a number two starter in all likelihood, I want the guy who is good or hurt. So when he's in there, he's good. When he is hurt, he is not there. So I think Iwakuma is going to be a pretty solid second starter when he's healthy in LA. And, you know, hopefully that's for at least 150 innings. And if he is, then great. That's, you know, that's well worth what his asking price is. But if not, then, you know, you move on and you say you tried, and you try it again next year with someone else.
Yeah, I can't believe I'm saying this about a 37-year-old bovine man, but I think I'd prefer Lackey. I think he's going to stay healthy. I trust his ability to log innings, and I know he has worse contextual factors, but I don't know. I guess the fair thing to say is it really depends on the construction of the rest of my team. If I'm sort of built to assume the risk that comes with Iwakuma, sure. But if I, you know, already have a fairly high-risk pitching staff, I would probably skew toward Lackey. At least they're close enough in my eyes to make that distinction.
Yeah, I'm a little – I mean, Lackey was freaking amazing last year. But his major – similar to Iwakuma, kind of his major bugaboo is home runs. And I don't necessarily see that going well in Wrigley. But he definitely, I mean, he's remarkably consistent in terms of his strikeout and walk rates the last 3 years. So,
and his FIP too, he's been crazy consistent.
Yeah. And what hasn't is his ERA. He's gone from, you know, 3.52 to 3.82 to 2.77. So mm-hmm. I guess, you know, would you probably expect around 3.5, right? Something around that.
Yeah, that sounds about right, which is what Iwakuma has been at the last 2 years.
Yeah. And yeah, that's exactly right. Iwakuma strikes out a little bit more and walks a little bit less, but you know,
I think they're
Yeah, they're comparable.
They're very comparable in terms of strikeouts. Iwakuma is probably going to give you a lower whip. I think Lackey has a chance to provide you with more wins because I think he's going to be healthy for longer.
Yeah, I think that's right. And I think I would say, you know, more upside for Iwakuma, a little bit steadier for Lackey.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
Overall, I mean, if we're talking about a league like CDGX and something that deep, 18 to 20, I might side Lackey too. Because, you know, you can say 37, but Iwakuma is kind of an old 34, or 35.
He'll be 35, yeah.
Yeah. So not that big a deal to me on that front. And I'd probably go Lackey too in a deeper league.
I mean, I think there's like a tier, right? I mean, it's clearly it's Lackey, Iwakuma, and Enya. Welcome back to version 3 of episode 60 of There Is No Offseason. Okay, Brett, Craig, we have sort of the major pitcher acquisition rundown for the offseason so far, all set. So now let's move into some of the biggest or perhaps at least most noteworthy bats who have signed. We'll plow through these guys, and then next podcast we'll get to some of the more minor deals and minor leaguers who have been traded in deals. But let's start with someone who I think we all agree that if he's used correctly, like, we, you know, this comparison is overwrought and used way too frequently, but it really holds true for him. I think that if he's used correctly in Chicago, Ben Zobrist could be the next Ben Zobrist. Brett, what do you see in his future?
I mean, if he plays his cards right, he really could be the next Ben Zobrist. They could play him all over the place. They could play him a little second, play him a little in the outfield, play him really all over the infield, except for, you know, third base probably. Don't see him playing too much there. But he's, you know, it just seems appropriate that he ends up in Chicago playing back for Joe Maddon. He's going to have his super multi-eligibility for a while, and I think he's going to age reasonably well for a non-top fantasy option. So, you know, I think he could be a back end of the top 10 or 12 second baseman for mostly the life of this contract, and you know, I think there's a good chance that you know, the power or speed is not never comes back to the point where he's going to be extremely overvalued. But overall, I think he's going to provide a base of stats across the board that will, you know, help in putting together a strong offensive team.
That's just a very, very succinct way to wrap up the Ben Zobrist story.
I would say I am a little concerned about his ability or how he's going to age. He's lost a few percentage points off his walk rate from years past. Not last year, but like back in his 2012 heyday. And I guess I'm a little bit concerned about how he ages based on the he kind of struggled on defense a lot before his knee injury, and I'm kind of wondering how that plays into it. He didn't run as much. Like, he was an annual double-digit steal guy. Last year he only had 3. You know, overall offensively, he was basically the same guy. I just wonder if he's one of those guys that when it kind of starts to go, it goes pretty quickly. But I don't know. It's a concern for more the last 2 years of the contract, not the immediate future.
Yeah, and that would have been the case no matter where he ended up. So I think
that's absolutely true.
Yeah. Okay. Why did the Cubs just basically give up Starlin Castro?
I don't know.
I have no idea.
Is it just the OBP? Is that really what we're focusing on? Not that that's a totally invalid point, but he's really young.
I kind of like, I hate defaulting to that. Like, oh, he's 24, or I guess he's 25. But he's still quite young, and he was really good after he was installed as a second baseman. And I don't know, I mean, you don't really want to say like, oh, he's playing second base, and as long as he plays second base going forward, he'll be that good or close to it. But, you know, maybe it was a better fit for him, you know, mentally, and that made him relax at the plate, and, you know, he took off from there. Who's to say in that regard? I don't know. He's not been a good, you know, offensive player, but relative to the league average at those positions, he's not been horrible either. And I don't know. I'm certainly higher on him than it seems the Cubs are, or maybe I'm lower on Adam Warren. But that was a pittance to me to give up him to give up Castro on that type of contract. And you know, overall, it's probably a solid place to land for him, given the stadium and the lineup he'll be going into.
I'm excited about Castro next year. I'm gonna end up owning Castro in a good many teams.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, like, I think it's a good landing spot. I don't know if it's better than where he was. I mean, you know, Wrigley is a good place to be a hitter, and that Cubs lineup is quite good. So I don't know if it's a better spot, but in terms of switching teams, he certainly could have gone a lot worse.
Yeah, and I think he was going to have to fight for playing time more in Chicago than he will in New York.
Yeah,
probably true. And as good as Wrigley is, I think Yankee Stadium is even better for power, no?
Not for right-handers.
That's true. We all know I can't tell the difference between right-handers and left-handers, so the park factors are nebulous to me. They're just factors.
The one thing that I'll note is that, you know, this falls into my skepticism of players going from the National League to the American League in year one. It's not a thing where I avoid these players, but there has been historically a number of players who have struggled at first when switching leagues, and I think it certainly could happen here, but I agree that Castro is certainly more valuable than this. I mean, I know there's been an awful lot of Adam Warren love out there, but this feels like the Cubs getting a little too cute with things. I think Castro is, you know, he's obviously had some down seasons, but in four of his six seasons in the majors, I mean, we talk about his OBP. In four of those six seasons, he's been at least a 320 OBP guy, which is, you know, it's not good, but it's not awful. I mean, two of the seasons he's been below 300, but it's not like he's been a below 300 OBP guy for his entire career.
I mean, last year he had a 117 WRC plus. He was 292 hitter, which he's been a good hitter most of his career.
Yeah.
So I really don't get it. I agree with Ben. I will, unless I'm in a league with Ben, I will probably wind up with Castro.
Yeah, I also think the power is coming too. I don't think it's going to be the type of power that people thought it might have been when he was 20. But I think he'll hit 20 home runs as a Yankee. Maybe not in 2016, but I think it happens.
I don't know about that. I mean, I can easily see him consistently hitting 15 plus every year. I think 15 is like a fair benchmark for him moving forward, honestly. Perhaps that's a little aggressive, but
no. I mean,
I don't think 15 is aggressive at all.
He's just entering his prime. I mean, honestly,
this is a bad trade. Adam Warren sucks. Okay, let's stay in the middle infield before we move on to the power hitters. And this trade was forever ago because we've been trying to record the goddamn podcast for 6 years. But Andrelton Simmons is now an Angel. I know not a huge fantasy factor, but I think he was a little bit of one once upon a time, and, you know, people forget that. So, Brett, what do you make of Simmons moving to the Angels? Does this matter to you at all?
No, I give zero shits.
Okay.
Pass.
Brett, you answered. Craig?
I can't top that.
You can't top zero shits?
No.
But what if he hits? What if he hits the dingers again?
If I can't top zero shits, I'll give, I guess, less than zero shits.
Fewer. What if he does the dingers? He did 17 dingers a few years ago.
I don't think that's ever happening.
No more dingers. No, he's dingered out. Okay, no more dingers for Simmons. That doesn't matter. Oh, you know, poor fucking Eric Ibar didn't even get a slot on the shitty list for next week. We're going to have to rectify that mistake because who doesn't want to talk about Eric Ibar? Okay. Neil Walker, longtime Brett Sayer favorite, has moved from the Pirates to the Mets. I feel like this doesn't matter at all. What about you?
I think it's actually a tick up. Citi Field is not a bad place for left-handed power. I mean, I know it has the reputation of being a pitcher's park, but it's not really a pitcher's park. PNC is definitely more of a pitcher's park. That said, yeah, I think Walker continues to be the consistent, you know, very back end of the top 10, you know, type of second baseman. I still adore him, and now I get to adore him from a closer proximity, so that makes me happy.
I'm with Brett. I've been with Brett on Neil Walker the entire time, and I agree with his analysis. Draft Neil Walker. He won't disappoint you.
Is this message brought to you on behalf of Neil Walker for America?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. All right. Brett Lowry was traded because Jed Lowry was acquired, and you can't have a Lowry and a Lowry on the same team. So now Lowry is a White Sox while Lowry remains an Athletic. What do we make of Lowry going to the White Sox? Craig, we can stick with you because we, you know, why not? There's only two choices now. Mao? Actually, I want to kick this out to Mao, the White Sox fan. Mao, how does Lowry look aesthetically at third base? Tell me how his ass pamphlet looks. Was real worried I wasn't going to get ass pamphlet in version 3, so I feel
I was going to say ass pamphlet just for the record.
Well, the nice thing, it's very cathartic. Brett, you want to give it a whirl? You seem a little stressed. Just let ass pamphlet out.
Yeah, I really like this move for Lowry. I'm probably going to own him on a bunch of teams just because I don't think anybody's going to want him. I mean, I think that the park is great. You know, I could see him hitting 20, 25 home runs in Chicago. And I don't understand this trade for the life of me because he was traded for two just completely made up names. And buoy to them. That means they don't have to play Matt Davidson, who is not
Mike
good.
Mike Holt.
Yeah. Did they cut Holt?
I don't know. Who the fuck knows? I don't even think they keep records of that shit.
Probably not.
Craig, you're just going to give up on Lowry? You have nothing for me?
Well, you took ass pamphlet from me. I don't think Brett Lowry is very good.
I kind of agree with your assessment. He's young. He's young. Is better than being old. Sorry, Brett.
He's kind of like what I feel like people think. He's what the Cubs think Starlin Castro is, maybe.
I don't know. I just, you know, it's dangerous to be like, oh, this player's only 20. I'm 25. I'm not getting better.
That's decidedly.
That's a rapid decline. Yeah. That's throw your aging curves out the window. So I don't know. I mean, I guess it's sort of like what I said with Simbarjo. Like, I'm sure at some point in the next 5 years, Lowry's going to have a great year, but fuck if I know when it's going to be.
Does it concern anyone? He added, 7% to his 7 percentage points to his strikeout rate last year. That's a lot.
That's a leading question. What am I supposed to say? No, I love that. I think that's great. That's a good fact.
I mean, Brett, does that, as someone who likes him, does that concern you at all?
Sure, but I mean, he also hit 16 home runs in Oakland last year.
Oh, now dingers matter. They don't matter for Simmons, but dingers matter for Lowry. That's
yeah, great. And he's going to a great hitting.
I think he could hit 240 in Chicago, but you know, if he hits 240 and hits, you know, 20 to 23 home runs, which I think is realistic, mm-hmm. What does that make him, a top 20 third baseman?
Oh yeah, okay, probably.
Yes, that's easy.
Top 20, yeah.
That's easy, right?
So does this mean you're not going to trade him and Justin Upton for Robinson Cano?
No.
Damn it. Okay. Let's move on to the sort of power hitting portion of this podcast, which, you know, Lowry's honestly a nice transition into that. Mark Trumbo, no longer a Mariner. He is now a member of the Orioles, and that should make it very easy for him to hit dingers. You guys care about dingers now? Anyone want to talk about dingers now that we're talking about Mark Trumbo in Camden?
I'll talk about dingers.
All right, talk about dingers.
Yeah, there could be a lot of them. There could be 30 of them. He still stinks, though.
True.
Yeah.
True.
But there could be 30 dingers, and that is worth something. I mean, he's essentially worth what people thought Pedro Alvarez was worth coming into this season.
Oh, that's a really good comp. That's really good. Craig?
I'm in on Trumbo in Baltimore. And I agree with Brett. He's not good. But I think, you know, he's going to be a very usable source of power there. And, you know, he was actually quite good for the Diamondbacks before they traded him to the disaster that, I mean, going to Seattle as a hitter has just got to be the most demoralizing thing. I mean, you can't even take a nap. Like, Ken Griffey Jr. couldn't get away with taking a nap during a game there. If you're Mark Trumbo, you're nothing.
You think he's going to, you think he's a fan of the Old Bay?
Oh, I think, yeah. I think he's into the Old Bay.
That's a ton of call. I'll let you guys have it.
Yeah, thank you.
Big fan.
Okay, so before we wrap this up, I want to hear Brett's thoughts on Byung-ho Park, because I know in a conversation you and I just went back and forth on him a tiny bit. Why are you not so high on Byung-ho Park, Brett?
He does not have a swing that will allow him to make very much contact. He made shockingly little contact in the KBO, which is dominated by pitchers who got like five starts back in 2005 and 2007 and have never been heard from since. The stats look great on his baseball reference page. When you look at them, he had 50 home runs in each of the last two seasons in the KBO. And you know what that means? That means just about dick. Eric Thames went 40-40 in the KBO last year, and this is the thing that I will throw out anytime someone talks about him. I think Jung-ho Kang was good in coming over. I think Kang was a little bit better than I thought he was going to be, but still, I mean, he hit 40 home runs in Korea the year before he came over, and he hit 15 in MLB. Now take Park, who has similar power, maybe a little bit more raw power, but way more swing and miss. Give him just first base eligibility, and then put him in a shitty park in Minnesota. And I don't want any part of that this year. I am not interested. I think he's a 230, 240-ish hitter at best, with maybe 20 homers. And I really think he's essentially what the Twins already had in Kenys Vargas, if Kenys Vargas is not the player that Craig thinks he is.
He's not.
He 100% is. It's still going to happen.
He's worse than Vargas and worse than Oswaldo Arcia.
They're both below the belt. Below the belt. Why you got to bring up Oswaldo Arcia?
I said he's worse than Oswaldo Arcia.
Why you got to bring Oswaldo Arcia up?
Because the Twins are fucking him over.
Made me sad.
Yeah, it is sad. But yeah, vote no on Park.
Much like Enya's new album, at least this fucking version of the podcast was recorded. Version 3 of episode 60 of Tino. As always, we'll end with a little housekeeping. Baseball Prospectus is publishing the annual top 10 prospect lists right now. Please be sure to go check those out. Brett is writing fantasy captions for every player, unless you're a member of the Angels, and Craig is heavily involved in the process, so you're not getting the best part of Tino, but you know, you can make do with 2 out of 3. Please rate and review us on iTunes. We're going to have a New Year's resolution in which we try to have at least a one-to-one ratio of new ratings to recordings. So we'll see if we can keep up with that. You can follow us on Twitter at Tino Podcast and get in touch with us through email at tinopodcast@gmail.com. Brett, where can we find you on the internet?
You can find me at Dynasty Guru on Twitter and at baseballperspectives.com and at thedynastyguru.com. Craig?
Yeah, you can find me at Baseball Prospectus, and, well, I can say the Dynasty Guru, but you can't really, you have to search really hard to find me there. And you can find me on Twitter at CD Goldstein. That's CD as in can't do a recording, Goldstein. Ben?
Truer words, Craig. Truer words. You can find me on Twitter at Ben Carsley. You can find me on Baseball Prospectus and at Baseball Prospectus Boston. Thanks for listening, and have a good night.
Happy Hanukkah, everybody. Iwakuma's whip has been over the past three seasons?
0.97.
Okay, it's higher than that.
1.08?
1.03.
He's 1.08 for his career.
Yeah.
Oh. Yeah, and it's his first season that's dragging him down. But he is elite in whip.
Yeah, that's a good point.
So he's got that hidden, he's got that like old Jordan Zimmerman. But Jordan Zimmerman, when Jordan Zimmerman is good, he's got that elite, like, kind of hidden whip value.
Jordan Zimmerman's always good. He's just
Can we talk about the worst thing about John Lackey is his middle name?
Yeah, but his F-bombs are so good.
Yeah, but Darren?
It's not good. It's not good.
D-E-R-R-A-N?
Did I say it was good?
No, but the spelling takes it to a new level. It's so bad.
And he looks like a horse, which is not great.
It's not ideal. To his credit, I mean, this is obviously not Iwakuma, but Lackey's whip is 1.21, which or 1.22, which is not horrible.
My favorite thing about Iwakuma is when he gives up a home run, you know it like right away because it's just a hanger that's like, oh my god.
I mean, we were trying to go quickly, but it's 100% true. Like he has the stuff. Like he strikes out a lot of guys. He's around the zone, but like when he misses, it's over.
Which
is how you average over a homer per nine in Safeco is just you're giving up no doubters.
Yep. That's pretty much the Iwakuma experience.